Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Dedrick.
And we'll just get right to this. We have a guest in the studio. We're not going to hide him from you like other shows do and build suspense and what have you. We're glad to have him here. He is a cartoonist. He is a publisher. He is a podcaster. He is Jeff Ellis. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good mic work, Jeff. You have been around these before. Dave is pushing the microphone slightly closer to you.
Come on, get in there.
Now
I see the problem. Okay, go ahead.
Do you see the problem? Is it you, Dave?
Introduce me.
Is the problem?
We're going to do a quick edit.
We're going to do a quick edit? Okay, here we go.
Probably not, but let's pretend that you're
introducing it. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Hi, everybody. If you like Cirque du Soleil, you're going to enjoy our guest today. He has nothing to do with that at all.
He is an acrobat.
He is a flamethrower. He is a fire eater. He is a fire pooper. He is a party pooper. He is from Cloudscape Comics. And what's the name of your podcast?
Oh, it's The Panel.
The Panel. Jeff Ellis is here. Hey, Jeff.
Hi.
Okay, we may have done a smooth edit there, or that just might have sounded ridiculous off the top. I'm not sure. Either and or either. Dave, how are things going?
Well, we'll do mic checks a bit more efficiently next time we do a show.
But
we haven't had a guest apparently.
Are people currently listening to this podcast?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Because why would they?
Fair enough. Sorry for the sloppy opening. It's embarrassing to do this in front of company.
Yeah.
But welcome.
Oh, it's okay, guys.
Now, we've wanted to have you on
mic
the show.
Check.
What's mic going check. On? Are you doing a mic check now?
Yeah. Testing.
Oh, listen.
Testing. La.
Okay. Dave is also the show's roadie, which is why he's shirtless right now.
Uh-huh. I was just doing the jump.
He was just beating his chest like he was Tarzan.
<That's right.
laughs> You have an impressive physique. We understand that. For a cartoonist, you are very cut. We get it.
For a cartoonist.
Yeah, I mean, you're not like regular man strong.
Not, no.
But for a cartoonist, you're easily the strongest man in the room. Back to you, Jeff. How's it going?
Oh, man. I'm a little intimidated having Dave here with no shirt on. So.
Yeah.
Well,
you know what? Eventually,
it's warm in here. That's all
he's got a pen. Eventually, he will draw a shirt on himself through the episode, which is what he does to relax every one of these things. Now, Jeff, we know you from when we were talking about doing cons, like we did VanCaf recently.
Yeah.
And you were there at VanCaf.
Yeah, I think I was there when you guys were just setting up your mics for your live this was Fan Expo I'm thinking of.
Yeah. You were also at Fan Expo?
Yeah. Well, I was attending Fan Expo, but yes, I was at VanCaf officially. Yes.
Well, why don't we go over how many hats you wear currently? So yes. what are all of your jobs currently?
This is why I don't even remember where I was at which show. But I'm the president of the Cloudscape Comic Society, which is a nonprofit society in town that's promoting comic book art.
The town of Vancouver.
Yes, in the town of Vancouver.
Yep.
I am an instructor at the Visual College of Art and Design downtown, and I run a webcomic called Teaching Us in Japan with Jonathan Dalton. And I am right now working on a brand new project that is titleless, but it's an East Vancouver project. And it's sort of because we're sort of in a little bit of a lull in Teaching Us in Japan right now.
Yeah.
And occasionally I'm a guest on The Panel, which is Cloudscape's podcast.
Really good podcast. Well worth a listen. Turn this one off and listen to it right now, unless that bit off the top annoyed you, in which case I can't blame you. But like, wait till the end of this and then listen to The Panel. Now, you're doing a comic about East Vancouver.
Yeah.
Now, that's very cool, because when we were at VanCaf, we were interviewing Steve Ralston. And Steve Ralston, who's a Vancouver guy, has done like about now 4 Toronto comics in a row, and is actually feeling bad about the fact that he has not done a Vancouver one in a very, very long time. Very few people do Vancouver comics.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, as I recall, I think he's born and raised. I don't know if you know.
I think he was both born and raised.
Yeah,
yes, I agree.
I've heard that.
Well, born and raised in Vancouver.
Oh, I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you know, like for me,
I wish you'd made that clear when we answered the question.
It's just a given to me. Like it's where I'm from. I'm from Vancouver. It's where my focus is, and that's.
You're a better person than Steve Ralston, is what you're saying.
Oh, well, better Vancouverite, maybe?
Yeah, let's go with that.
You say that, I say sure. better person. Dave, what do you say about
He has my vote for the Georgia Strait poll for best Vancouverite.
Oh.
This gentleman
yeah.
right here?
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. There you go.
They should add that category.
Oh, by the way, this is a good time to go, hey, everybody, if you've got a Georgia Strait in front of you, you might be seeing that there's a thing in there where you can vote for your favorite things in Vancouver. If you live in Vancouver, even if you don't live in Vancouver, you can vote. Or you can go to straight.com or straight.ca. I don't know which
it's
one
it is. Straight.com.
All right, fair enough. Straight.com. And you can vote for things like Best Podcast. You can vote for us if you want to. Vote for Sneaky Dragon, Completely Beatles, or the panel, whatever. And a favorite Vancouverite, of course, Jeff Ellis. Back to you, Jeff. So you're doing a comic about East Van. Now, is this autobiographical? Is it a fictional story?
It's fictional. It's fictional. I've been wanting to branch out. Jonathan is my co-writer on Teaching Us in Japan, and he got really busy with kickstarting his own book.
Oh, what's his book?
Just throw that plug A out. Mad Tea Party. And he just managed to fund the trade paperback of that.
Oh, good. Good on.
Which is great, except that now his life is now stuffing envelopes and fulfilling incentives and being on strike, because he's also a school teacher.
I can't even tell you how much the teacher strike has affected our podcast. And I think we're suffering the most now from that.
Yeah.
Because everyone we know is now touched in some way. And because it all gently touches us in some way, we are all being lightly fingered on this podcast by the teacher strike in some way. So I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. But no, but that's what was it? An opportunity because you know, with him being unavailable to write, I'd run out of script and I wanted to do some more comics, so it got me to thinking I haven't done a personal project really ever, at least not in the last 7 years, so this was an opportunity for me to just do something for myself. And so I started putting some ideas together, and I've got a website kind of cobbled together, and so it's going to be a little experiment in how popular this story about East Vancouver by myself is going to go.
Nice.
So yeah, it's early days yet. I was actually just writing some of the scripts over at 33 Acres before I came over here, actually.
Now, what is 33 Acres?
That is a microbrewery.
Mm-hmm. Write drunk.
It helps.
East Van story.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, this all makes sense. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, all the pieces are falling into place.
Soak it all in over here and on the South Main here on the hill.
We are not judging in any way. Dave and I eat a lot of candy before the show just to get ourselves all worked up.
That's right. I'm full of Turkish delight right now.
You are a Turkish delight, my friend. Now, you say that this is your first personal story in a while. What was your last personal story? Why don't we get into your origins, your secret origins?
Sure, that sounds good.
All right.
Like I mentioned at the beginning there, born and raised in Vancouver.
Woo!
I think it was Children's Hospital.
It's really going back.
You were very young at the time.
Yes,
don't worry if you don't remember. That's
was it a dark
right.
and stormy night?
Well, some people ask, like, was it Vancouver General or was it which hospital?
Who asked that?
Yeah, who asked?
Anyone? If I tell them I was born and raised in Vancouver, they're like, which hospital?
Yeah, which hospital? Prove your story.
Yeah, well,
just tell them that. Yeah,
well, it depends
on
which hospital. Maybe like depends on how they then react to you. Maybe I don't know. You got to be born in the right hospital.
Okay.
Long story short, guys, both.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but...
it's a long, drawn-out labor.
Yeah, so I grew up in Vancouver, and I was originally wanting to be a Marvel comic artist, actually. I drew a bunch of different test Marvel scripts. I did, like, a Spider-Man script and a Thor script, and they're the most embarrassing thing I've ever drawn.
Did you do the Marvel tryout book?
Yeah, I have the tryout book.
I think we got one of those kicking around here at Hell Kitty Studios.
I have the new tryout book.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's the one that had the letter by Mark Bagley that's like, yeah, this worked out for me. even though this isn't a contest, maybe it'll work out for you. I did a portfolio of work. I brought it down to San Diego Comic-Con and was basically kind of told, no, I don't think you're cut out for this, kid. At least not now. Maybe get some more experience under your belt.
That was just the janitor in the building.
He was helpful too, though.
Yeah.
Let's go to the janitor.
I went into graphic design. So I went to Capilano College on the North Shore, graduated into the lucrative graphic design field of Vancouver.
It is literally a license to print money.
Oh yes.
If you can figure out the program.
If you can become an instructor, maybe.
Oh, that. I mean, I was actually thinking you could really, yeah, if you did get the right paper, you could print, yeah, money. Anyway,
but actually, you know, you'd be pretty close. But
I'm thinking now with those 3D plastic printers. I'm just saying the plastic money we got, ooh, right now.
Come, I like, on, the way you think.
How hard is that? You know, it looked, because a new bill is coming out, what, like every 3 weeks or something, and like, I don't know, this is the new 100. All right. And there you go. Anyway, back to Enterprises.
No. It's all good.
It's good he's advertising it on the show, though. It's very honest of you.
But yeah, so
I cry for help. Stop me. I'm a counterfeiter. Help! I keep printing money. Stop me.
To cut corners, the government will start 3D printing the bills. That's, and right, that'll be like, yeah, the biggest like bureaucratic oversight.
I'm trying to print on Saran wrap.
And then it all goes wrong. We have to use Canadian Tire money in Canada. That's the only legal currency is those Scotty dollars.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
They're finally worth something.
Somebody, there's like an urban legend that like if you go to Mexico, they'll take your Canadian Tire dollars.
Let me tell you, it ain't an urban legend. That was something that, okay, listen, in my darker days, let's just say, perhaps I went to some places in Washington.
Yes.
And perhaps that's what I did.
Really?
Yes. Perhaps, wow. I may have slipped, like I was exchanging.
Stop.
Canadian,
you don't wanna.
And then there was a, I slipped one of those into, it's fair enough.
Don't want to go there.
It's their fault for accepting a 15-cent bill.
Shush.
Okay.
15-cent bill.
I love it. I think I could see that.
That's right.
They're,
it's
like,
their fault.
They're like, oh, those crazy Canadians, they even have a bill for 15 cents. Like, what's wrong with them?
That's right. The United States, they riot at the idea of a dollar coin. But Canadians, 15-cent bill, sure, whatever. We're fine with that. It makes it a lot easier.
You're just jamming it into a gum machine. You got to fold it really tight and just shove it in there.
When I was in China, they had bills for the coins. And
yeah,
you had to be careful because someone would totally try and give you a 10-cent bill instead of a $10 bill. Because, you know, like, oh, you're not paying attention, right?
I can't endorse that sort of behavior anymore. No, not at all. So you wanted to be Marvel guy. It didn't work out.
Yeah.
You did graphic design. You went like, okay, there you are. Yeah. And then like, how did comics come back into the mix?
Oh, comics took a big break, actually.
Yeah?
I tried to find work in graphic design, and I hit kind of a breaking point and just sort of like threw in the towel on the whole thing, and I packed up and moved to Japan. Mm-hmm. I taught English there for 2.5 years.
Well, let's clarify this. Now, you've got a comic strip called a comic called Teach English in Japan. Is that autobiographical, semi-autobiographical?
Semi-autobiographical.
Very,
yeah,
good. So it's two characters, so only one of them is autobiographical. And the other guy is made up.
Oh, I love that question when people ask me that. It's
it's lucky you did.
I also wanted to ask you what hospital you were born in.
Was it a witch hospital? I'm just curious.
Oh, it's well, so with Teach English in Japan, I started that when I got back. So I was away for 2.5 years. I really wasn't doing a lot of comics at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I had been sort of scribbling in a notebook, and I had developed this comic strip just kind of about really unsavory foreigners that I was encountering, because there's a lot of them.
I'm just picturing like a comic called Unsavory Foreigners.
It
seeing how that would play.
The title was worse. do you guys have an explicit warning?
Yeah, we do. We have to actually use it, too.
Yeah, we have to use it. Otherwise,
you
lose
it. Unless it's just a horrible racial slur, in which case, I'm going to say pull back on that one.
Well, no, it's a C-bomb, so...
Go for it.
Okay, sure. Well, so originally it was called Cunt Abroad.
What? I had no idea you were... We can't
I
say the word broad. Come on, that's sexist.
That was well, that was meant in the British context of just a really horrible person.
Absolutely.
Sure.
I'm not 100% against that title, actually.
But, yeah, so I was scribbling a lot of crazy, like, one-off kind of gag strips, and I wasn't really structuring them or posting them. And then I got back to Vancouver, and I started working at a design job. That didn't work out. I ended up working at an art store. Someone I was seeing at the time had suggested, well, you know, maybe you should get back to comics. Maybe you should put a comic collective together. And so what's a comic collective? Well, it's a bunch of artists meeting up and drawing comics together. So I started a Facebook group, and we had a record number of people joined the group, and
right,
most of them were from Vancouver. So we met at our town cafe,
Very in the same building as we're recording right now.
Yeah, actually,
it is.
It is. Yeah, and the
if you climb on the roof, you could get there.
That's true. Yeah. So we started there. We had a big group of people, enough people that I thought we could publish a book, and that's kind of where Cloudscape was born from. And the other part of Cloudscape was meeting Jonathan Dalton. So Jonathan joined Cloudscape in time to be in the first book, and I had expressed some interest in doing a comic of my own, and he wanted to kind of give me a little, I guess, mentorship, because he's already done some webcomics. And I showed him my sketchbook, and you know, he was like, well, we got to change the title, and we should probably give it a little more structure. And we sort of took aspects of my time in Japan as well as aspects of his time in Taiwan and kind of melded all that into one story.
Okay.
And so we put two characters in because we wanted to have aspects of both of us. And that's why I ask when people – or that's why I say I like when people ask me who is – you know, which character represents you,
right?
Because I feel like both characters represent parts of me and both characters represent parts of Jonathan.
Yeah.
So when people want me to really like pin it down and say that character is Jeff Ellis, like both characters, some of the side characters even represent parts of me.
Yeah, they bounce off each other really well. One is the, and you know what? Read it. It's online. It's free. Read it. Or buy it. Also buy it. You could also buy it. But it's also online. But yeah, you got your one character who's the sincere, kind of the more sincere type. And the other guy is just stumble bums into things.
That's right.
And stumble bums out of things. And then,
yes.
You know, it's you know, it's good. It's a fun strip.
Yeah. No. It was interesting when I first started the strip because a buddy of mine was reading it and he was so mad at the James character that just kind of stumbles into things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's like, who is this guy? He just shows up. He doesn't have a plan. Gets a job. Like, screw that guy. I hate him. And
to
I'm like...
To be fair, he felt the same way about Snoopy.
Yeah, maybe.
Was a dog flying a plane like a human? He doesn't have a license. Jerk ass.
Where does this dog get off?
Really mad at any comic strip he sees. Hey, Heathcliff, you're no Garfield. Shut up. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah. No, it was I mean, it's the first time I've ever written something that got, like, such a strong response from someone.
Yeah.
And we hadn't even gotten to... This was so early. It wasn't even a... at the point where they changed jobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, both of them, it looked like both of them were going to get a job at the same company. And my friend was just so angry. And I'm like, well, you got to read a couple more pages.
He's got a horseshoe up his ass right now. Yeah. But soon he's going to shit out that horseshoe.
Yeah.
And things are going to go terribly wrong.
Well, just shitting out a horseshoe, that's going terribly wrong.
Yeah, well, you know that's that. The you're beginning. You're a farrier.
I'm a farrier. That's right. So I have a lot of experience shitting out horseshoes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of on-the-job accidents.
Now,
that's what I tell the hospital when I go there anyway.
Now,
I don't know how they got their doctor.
Now, Dave and I, just to turn it around to us, because, you know, what about us, is what people are saying. Now
that's what our show's called.
Yeah. Hey, how about us? We both started doing comics. Now, you were not part of any comics collectives, though, were you?
They would not have me.
That is not true, is it?
No, I
No, I'm just wondering, because, like, when we, like, in the 90s, I'm older than you, when I, in the 90s, I was doing a comic collective, and we did a comic called Dysfunctional Comics, and did that with James Lloyd, and guest of the show, Robert Dayton, and some other people, and Susan Ferguson was in that as well.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, and that, we did about four, maybe five issues, I don't think I did the fifth issue, but we did, it's, at a certain point, I think, in Vancouver, something happens, and I don't know what occurs, but, like, the weather changes a bit and everyone goes Comics Collective now, and then we all gather together.
what time was this happening, like,
well, we
do you remember what era?
Yeah, I can tell you this much. New Comics had just come out. Are you familiar with that at all?
No.
That was like Sean Hayes Holthgate. There's so many really great cartoonists. Did two issues of a comic called New Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And that made a really big splash. It got a lot of press.
Yeah.
It was in color. Well, the cover was in color. It was really pretty. They had like a lot of they had like shows where Cub would be performing, which was a band at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, comics would be for sale while Cub plays. And it was all hip.
Oh, wow.
And we went like, we want a piece of that, says this comics guy. And we were kind of the lesser.
Yeah.
But then all of those guys, it seems like EA came along and hired them all to do sports video games designs. So all the cartoonists in Vancouver vanished.
Right.
And had no time to do comics anymore. And none of them, it seems, really did comics too much after that. They all went on to do video games. So we kind of picked up that baton. that was lying on the ground and did ours for a little bit. And after that, we all kind of split off and did our own things.
See, that's really interesting because I think before that, Colin Upton was
Colin was also a little bit part of Dysfunctional. I'm not sure if he actually was in it, but yeah.
But there was something previous to that that he was a part of.
Yes, that is true. And I forget what that was. That's what I mean. It's like every decade, something goes click. Well, collective must form now. And then everything bursts out. Of that.
Well, that's what I was saying, is Colin was part of something, and then I didn't know you had started. I didn't know about Colin. Dysfunctional Comics, but then I know after that, then there was the Crown Commission that Ed Brisson started, right?
Okay.
And that was Ed Brisson and Robin Bougie and Jason Turner, and all that kind of group, and then and that is the group that sort of founded the Vancouver Comic Jam, right?
All right.
And then there, in the midst of that, there was a little bit of a younger group that started something called the Radar Friends, and that had Jordan Beauchamp and a bunch of other people whose name I forget right now, but they all just sort of moved away. They're all like in Halifax now. But, you know, and then Cloudscape came along. So, yeah, it's just been these like generational kind of like comic collectives like sprouting up in the city.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And they all seem to like then go out to like people in them seem to do fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if only in the video game industry.
Animation now.
Yeah, animation. That's true. There wasn't as much of the animation back then. Now, Dave, how did you kind of come into doing your own self published comics? Because I was a bit inspired by your by you as a cartoonist. You kind of pushed me a bit as a cartoonist because you did stuff like in high school and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then what was your first like self published comic?
Well, that my one and only would have been Rounders. Really.
Well, it's not your one and only because we did do a couple of jams.
Well, we did a couple of jams together, but my one and only as like a solo artist would have been me as artist writer was just the one issue of Rounders. So, and I guess that came out 1993.
Mm-hmm.
So was that before Dysfunctional? I think that was before Dysfunctional. I probably wasn't a part of Dysfunctional because at that time I was a dad with small kids.
Well,
so
let me ask you this. Did your comic come out before my comic, I?
Nope. Came out after.
All right. I did I after.
We were working on...
I did I after Dysfunctional Comics.
We were... Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I wonder why I wasn't part of Dysfunctional. I didn't live in Vancouver. It was also part
we
of the all, problem.
We used to meet at the... originally, we met at the Smash Gallery. Mm. Which was 12 Midnight's.
I remember doing
gallery
some.
In
we
town.
Did some shows there. Like we did some stuff there. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why. I probably was just a snob. Any club that would have me as a member is not worth joining.
There we go.
I don't know. I know. I really don't know. It's probably just a case of.
Sorry, I was thinking. That's what it says above every glory hole.
Yes.
Oh.
Ooh, sorry.
Any club that would have this member as a member is not worth joining. It's probably that I was out in, I was living in the sticks, so it was just really hard to come into town for the odd thing. So I was just kind of plowing my own furrow out there, which is a lot harder, actually, than when you're part of a scene, there's more incentive to do
nice.
Stuff.
It is nice. I mean, the co-op thing, I think, really does help you, especially at the start, you know, to, you know, you're jamming off people and checking each other's stuff, and, oh, this guy's got a really good strip, I better up my game next time, because I don't want to look like, because I know I'm going to be side by side with James Lloyd. Oh, okay, that guy can really draw. Here we go. And off you go.
Well, it's funny you say that because I remember drawing with you in high school and you were really excited by my art.
Yeah.
And that got you really excited. And I do remember that because it's funny that the different kind of personality types. I had another friend that I used to draw with when we were younger, when we were in elementary school. And he was much better than me until junior high. And then I got better than him and he just quit drawing entirely. Which I think is just an interesting reaction to that.
Well, some people do have to be the best, and I know that's the same with an anthology. Sometimes is you'll have an anthology, and then someone will be like the king of the anthology, which isn't the best thing to be in an anthology, frankly. And then like someone else will come along and be like better, and they'll go, I'm done now. You want to be the number one guy, and it's like that's not how an anthology works, brother.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
All right.
Well, I think Cloudscape's longevity is. Due in large part just the fact that we have such a big revolving door. So people can keep coming and going. So.
You actually do have, by far, the longest running of all the things we've mentioned. Those things all lasted like 2 years tops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're seven years now. Moving on to eight.
Yeah. No, that's really impressive. By the way, Dave's been smoking a giant cigar through this whole thing, and now he's paying the price.
Nothing like the water going down the wrong way.
So how many anthologies has Cloudscape done now?
Seven. Yeah, seven. So we did one a year, basically. So it's been 7 years, seven anthologies.
Wow.
So the latest one is Waterlogged, Tales from the Seventh Sea, which is all about the ocean.
So they all have a theme.
Oh, yeah, which is, I know...
That's a very smart thing to do with an anthology, because that is one of the problems with anthologies, is they're kind of sometimes all over the place.
Well, yeah, that's my thinking, and I've always subscribed to, like, having a theme. Because our first book, we kind of had, like, a really vague theme. We're like, Vancouver, question mark. And then we just got a whole mixed bag of things, and it just didn't feel cohesive. So the second book, we said, all right, history. Everyone's got to pick a time period. And that worked so much better. And then the third book we did, humor, and we found out none of us were very funny. And then the fourth book was science
called
fiction.
Called Serious.
Oh, no. We did Fun Day Sunnies was our sort of tribute to Sunday comics. Yeah. And I think that book would have been a smashing success if we just slipped it into the province and just gave it away for free to everyone. It probably would have been really successful, but... Selling it for $5.
Someone did. You know what? Honestly, someone did do that. What was it? Oh, I know. I think it was Terminal City. Terminal City, are you familiar with that newspaper?
Yeah.
They did a thing once, I believe, where it was just comics. They did a comics insert, and they inserted it into their own paper, but I think they inserted it into some other papers as well. Like, they just opened the newspaper box and jammed some in to get, like, press. Yeah. They wanted the press to go, hey, what is going on? But the press didn't bite.
That's what we should have done. But yeah, so I don't know. Just humor didn't quite fit with us. But then we did science fiction. So Exploded View was our fourth book. That did really well. And then we did Travel, which is 21 Journeys. And then Fantasy was Giants of Main Street. And then we came to the ocean. And the last two books have been Indiegogo funded.
Okay.
So we haven't had to put any money down for the printing. It's just all been ordered pre-orders.
That's
been a big change for us, because we used to sort of pass the hat and beg for cash, and some of these things barely happened. And so when you can go to the internet and say, hey, we've got this idea for a book, this is what we want to make, and then enough people put their money down up front, you're like, great, bills are paid. Now we can produce this book. And yeah, we got a hardcover book with black and blue ink inside, which is, I think, really amazing. And that's why we actually are nominated for a Gene Day Award for that book.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I only just found out about a week ago myself. Shows you how much I'm paying attention to the awards.
Do you do a
scene.
Google alert on your own book?
I know I should.
Really should do a Google alert. Only way to know.
I found out. You know, it's funny how I found out. I found out was at Cardam's Donuts, and Mike Meyer, who's like another local cartoonist, he was in there, and he just stopped to say hello. And I know he just had a child, so I said, you know, congratulations, Mike. And he said, oh, well, thanks, and congratulations to you. And I said,
and you went, oh my God, I've got a baby somewhere in this town.
That's a terrible way to
find out you're a dad.
Yeah, seriously. What have I done? I haven't had a kid. And he's like, oh, I was just meaning for the Gene Day Award, because I'm nominated and you're nominated. That's news to me.
Wow.
So yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So we'll find out soon if we win or not. But it's pretty exciting.
Good old Google alerts. I always tell you when you write something about yourself.
It's nice. Really, it's nice to win awards, but it's also nice to be the, hey, you really got ripped off guy, man. I'll tell you, I really enjoyed your book. I mean, that's also nice too. You know, either way, it's the honor just to be nominated. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So wait a second. So you're saying it's nice to win.
Yeah.
But it's also nice to be the person who tells people that they should have won.
I'm saying it's nice to go and have a donut and have someone show up and nice. Tell you you've been nominated
it
for
sounded,
an award.
It didn't sound that way. It sounded like what you said was, it's nice to win and to go around telling people that they should have won.
Well, you know, the other nice thing is to correct your friends on a podcast. Not let it, let that kind of thing
I just didn't want that to slide.
No.
Because someone could mishear it or hear it properly.
Nitpicked. Well done.
People could hear it and then think, what kind of, that
you
guy,
know what?
Ian?
It's nice that awards exist.
There we go.
Who doesn't like a nice award?
I like your attitude.
Unless you tie for third, in which case Dave gets pissed off for some reason.
Oh right, I remember that.
I know, we got really steamed.
Did I get steamed?
I know.
Was that? It's not even a real podcast.
You know what? Because we got
it's
nominated.
A radio
show. We tied with a hot dog stand. Anyway, like it's not even a podcast. It's not even a podcast. Japa Dog.
Oh,
I know everyone
that's
likes
right.
it. They're around the con, but they are not. They
They're
do not,
not a
do
yeah.
a podcast.
They do, it turns out.
Really?
Yeah.
I would listen to the Japadog podcast.
The hot dog cast.
Well, it sounds like now you've overcome two hoops of comics. Three, you've made longevity. I mean, because you've beaten all the groups that you've set for distance. Yes. Two, the problem with an anthology, there's never a theme.
Yeah.
You know, and so that helps. Even the anthologies I like the most, like a Dark Horse Comics Presents, I'm like, that's a bit of a mixed bag, and how much does it cost? But yeah, a theme, that's great. And also, the money problem, you've just like gone to the people out there, and they've said, of course. Oh,
Kickstarter and Indiegogo, like that, to me, is the future of independent publishing.
Yeah.
You know?
And just, you know, the smart, like, I've seen a couple lately, and the mistake I think some people make is where they go, like, I'm going to have this much to publish the book. That sounds great. This much to pay the artist. That's fantastic. And I would like $10,000 for my time. No, you don't get it for your time. Yeah. You don't get it. You don't get that money for the time that you're putting into this. No.
Time you're putting into Kickstarter?
Not the time you're putting into Kickstarter, but the time you're putting into like developing this and all this. It's like, well, I'm gonna take like 2 months off work to do this, and so I'm gonna. If you could just pay me what I'd get paid at my work while I do this, I'm like. You're not really getting how this all goes. You gotta be more specific than that.
You need to do is you need to make that a stretch goal.
That's actually
this is what we're doing, because we're I don't know, the page isn't up yet, but we are starting our Kickstarter very soon for our next book, our eighth book, Megafauna, which is going to be specifically for children, for a young audience.
Nice.
In the Kickstarter, and this is going to be our first Kickstarter, so we're leaving Indiegogo, we're going to Kickstarter. We have the budget laid out, as well as the shipping laid out, and then as a stretch goal, it's getting everyone paid. So we want to make this book happen. Our artists have always volunteered thus far, and so we'd like to change that. But we're not expecting people to put money down to pay the artists up front, so that's our stretch goal. So if we can get enough orders to print the book will happen. If more people continue to order,
right.
Hint, hint, then the artists will get paid. So if you, maybe in a couple weeks, if you go on Kickstarter and you do a search for Megafauna, you might find our campaign.
We'll plug it on our Facebook and stuff.
Pre-order a book, yeah.
Nice. No, it sounds like you're what you call sensible, and that's interesting. That's not what I run into a lot. Here's what you run into a lot with, like, the arts. You run into this guy with a lot of passion. He's a lot of passion for about a couple of weeks, and then he loses his passion, and everything goes to shit.
I have my hand up.
Do you have your hand up? What's your question, Mr. Dedrick?
No, I'm just identifying myself as that person.
Yeah, you can't let the passion kind of run things.
Yeah.
And you seem to be using the systems that are in place very well. Now, are you doing Kickstarter because you can now as a Canadian and you couldn't before?
Yes. Yeah, and Kickstarter reaches more people. I don't know the details, but a lot of my friends have recently been telling me, like, oh, you want to get off that Indiegogo. There's a lot of controversy over there.
Oh, so, okay.
I don't know the story, but apparently there's a lot of drama on Indiegogo these days. Apparently Kickstarter is the way to go. I know that financially it breaks down better too.
Well, I remember when we had Shane
Elkin.
Yeah, he was on here and he was promoting his Indiegogo. Two things. One, he was saying like Indiegogo, even if you don't make all your money, you get to keep the money. Whereas a Kickstarter, it used to be you either make it all or you don't. It was like a game show almost. Like, ooh, so close. Dollar short. Sorry, buddy. We're going to have to take that money away from you.
Yeah.
Like, but I... And the other thing was, like, whenever I looked at Shane's page, there would always be, like, a picture of, like, a sick dog next to it. And just, like, this dog could really use a new leg. And it's like, well, I could give this guy money for the album or give the dog a wooden leg. I think I could probably give the dog a leg. He really needs to run around a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was, like, a weird mix. Like, they didn't really keep things separate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I know you take a higher percentage at Kickstarter. I think with Indiegogo... Because you keep the money, like every transaction, they take a percentage for every Visa transaction, where like Kickstarter, they just like wait until it's done.
Yeah.
And they just do one transaction. So you ultimately are paying less on Visa transactions. But Anyways. Yeah,
no, this is interesting stuff, because I'm sure there's people out there right now that are thinking about Kickstarter and Indiegogo and that kind of thing. You know, we have a lot of people out there who like comics and that kind of thing, and a lot of people who do their own stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so, no, this is all these kind of details that you kind of go, who wants to hear these details? People want to hear these details.
All right,
it's
good,
fine.
Good. Well, I mean, I will say, like, we've done 3 Indiegogo campaigns, and I have no complaints about Indiegogo.
Except for the name. It's ridiculous.
It is a little... It's when we first pitched it, someone was like, guys, Indiegogo. We're like, ha, what's the real website? Like, no, it's called Indiegogo.
No, we're going to do Flippity Doobucks. Okay, well, let's do the Flippity Doobucks and see if the money comes in. It's fine. Yeah.
But no, I've not had any personal bad experiences. I would endorse Indiegogo, but Kickstarter, from just the people I've talked to and from actually attending when Kickstarter launched, I got to go to their opening event and just listening to their pitch and what they have to offer. I think it's worth us trying Kickstarter for our next campaign.
Okay.
So maybe a year from now, I'll have some actual information on my experiences from Kickstarter. But I don't have any bad things to say about Indiegogo. But from kind of my like current assessment, it seems like Indiegogo is not quite as good as Kickstarter.
Okay.
So my advice to people is maybe try Kickstarter, but if you're a little nervous about Kickstarter, then maybe you could try out Indiegogo.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
But from people you've met in donut shops, you've heard some bad things about Indiegogo.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, well, there's...
That's his sources.
You're a dad! What?
No, I was at... actually, I did...
So I found out.
That's how, was that how you found out?
Yeah,
you
went I was at a donut shop.
Well, and then you went a second time. You found out a second time.
Yeah.
And you went, I can't go afford to go anywhere donut shop.
I'm not anywhere. I just don't go in. I go through the drive-thru.
Put your donut on Indiegogo.
My donut.
Help Dave buy a donut.
That's right. I'm going to do a Buy Dave a Car campaign on that.
Now, how are you getting the books into stores globally?
Can I just ask one question about
Dave, I would like to dominate this interview. No, please continue. Go.
I was just going to ask, do you guys do like a video to kind of talk about the...
Yeah, you need a video.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't... I mean, that's maybe my one big advice to anyone listening is, like, do a video. Mm-hmm. If you don't do a video, there's no point.
Okay.
Like, you're not going to get traffic if you don't do a video.
Sure.
And then do a good video.
Do a good video, okay.
Because that's, like, I think our first campaign on Indiegogo, someone recorded a video herself, just her in front of her laptop with her headphones on. And, you know, it was, like, a dimly lit basement, just, like, talking directly to the camera.
And a window as backlight?
Yeah, something like that. And there's a cat, like, on a bookshelf or something. Like, no, but, like, God bless her. She did that of her own time for free and put it up herself. And she spoke with passion. But it was, like my friend works at an animation studio, and his boss, like, looked at the webpage and, like, immediately, like, called him into the office, was like, you got to change this video. And so, like,
I'm picturing him doing it like Mr. Slade on the Flintstones, just like, what's with this video, Bumstead, get in here.
Yeah,
his name's Bumstead, right? Dagwood Bumstead. Yeah. Right, but his boss is always mad at him.
It was
whatever
I think
is.
He was a little
Mr.
friendlier
Githers.
About it, but
oh, yes.
But yeah, so we, me and Kevin Forbes, we just like shot another video overnight. We filmed both of us reading the same script at different camera angles, and then we edited it so it looked like the camera was jumping back and forth between us, and replaced the original video, and we saw an increase in traffic right away.
Yeah.
And then our next video, we tried to make sure we included, like, you know, cover images fading in and, you know, testimonials. And then our latest one, Waterlogged, we had Angela Melick involved, and she's a notable webcomic artist in town who does a webcomic called Wasted Talent.
Okay.
Maybe your
really
listeners know her.
I do, and I enjoy her book.
Excellent.
I think we brought up the book in the past.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've helped her assemble her last 3 books, actually. She was having a story.
An expert at InDesign, everybody.
I am. I teach InDesign.
That's
how much of an expert I am. Angela was having a story in Waterlogged. So basically she was just like, all right, guys, this is going to be a successful campaign. So I've planned your video for you. I need like 5 of you, and I need costumes. And like I've booked the weekend. We're going to make this happen. And it was amazing. We We have a member in our group who has pirate costumes that were donated to us. And so we all dressed up as pirates. We filmed ourselves having a sword fight in English Bay. We booked time at the Maritime Museum and had a video of us hanging off the bow of the ship in the museum. We ran into the ocean. And, you know, my friend Oliver found out that hip waders don't work if you go in past your hips. And, you know, well,
that's the time to find out.
Yeah, yeah.
Then they just lock you into the sea as the tide rises.
Then they become hip anchors.
Yes. Yeah. 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 But yeah, so we had just an insane over-the-top video, and it was great. It was great. But that's entirely Angela Melick made that video happen. And so now for Megafauna, we're currently putting the script together for the current video, and we're all kind of like bricking it because we're just like, all right, how are we going to make it as good as the last video?
Well, let me tell you.
Okay, and I'll do a pitch after Dave.
Go. I'm going to lend you my giant sloth costume. So you guys are already on the road. Already on the road.
Here's my pitch to you guys.
Pitch.
It's like it's you guys, and you're the cartoonists and whatnot, and you're all up there. And then all of a sudden, you become adorable children, child versions of yourself, all dressed in the same general way. And it's just these adorable child versions of yourself doing the pitch. Because it's a kid's thing, right?
Ooh.
So there you go. Who doesn't like a little child giving them a thing, but talking like an adult?
Ooh.
Lil Cloudscape. Not with swearing.
Yeah. It would be like those old Frosted Mini Wheat commercials.
Oh, before it got really pervy.
The kid in me likes.
Oh, that yeah, okay. Well, the new Shreddies ones kind of bug me.
How come I don't know these things?
They're the new the new Shredded Wheat. He seems to be like having a hot tub party with his other friends, and they're heating up the milk, and like the female ones flirting with him really hardcore. I'm like, what's going on?
Is this the Shreddy that's doing it?
Yeah, it's like the Shredded Wheat, and like they're all. I think it's what's the one that's frosted on one side and
Shredded Wheats, yeah.
Yeah, something.
Anyway. I know the ones you mean because he goes over to the house and there's like she's a sexy one with filling or whatever, and he's all turned on by her.
Yeah, but like
Which
she's got
weird,
a boyfriend.
He doesn't have filling.
There's a lot of weird.
Yeah.
Like I don't need this much backstory. Yeah. Look, here's all I need: Snap, Crackle, and Pop. They live together. That's all I need to know about them. I don't know the social life.
Don't you like?
They date the same lady.
I don't
need any of this business. I don't need to see the key party at their house that night where Tony shows up. I don't need any of this business. Just tell me about your product.
I just love the one that's it's Anna Karenina with Shredded Wheat characters. It's great. When the Shredded Wheat, when it gets run over by the train at the end, so sad.
Mm-hmm.
So sad. It's a real train running over Shredded Wheat just left on the track.
Well, there's one now where there are two berries, right? And they're both singing and they're sexy lady berries. And then like the Shredded Wheat guy, he starts coming along and he's in a tractor plowing over wheat. I'm like, you're killing your people.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you see, they're in his head and they're like living in his head now because they've been like inserted into the wheat. And then the next thing you see, this real hayseed farmer that makes Cletus look like a city slicker just like plowing Shredded Wheat to his mouth. And like, you're eating little versions of him. And then like, what's the... No! Pick a direction. This is horrific. Awful. Anyway, don't do that. Adorable children.
Yeah, all right.
Looking like you.
See,
like a little child wearing your glasses and your clothes.
Just do it. Do it like Charlie Brown. Just have them read one line at a time.
Yes.
And then edit it.
See, we were thinking we don't have access to a lot of children, but we have access to a lot of
Go
pets.
To a donut shop. There are plenty of people, apparently, who have just had kids hanging around donut shops.
Yes, apparently. Well...
Okay, what do you have access to?
Well, this is the thing. Because it's about people and animals. So we have access to pets. So we were thinking we just do us with our pets.
Okay, sure,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all right with that, too.
So we were doing
kids
like
or animals.
We were doing like a roll call of like who has weird pets. And it's, you know, we actually have access to ferrets.
I was going
to
go
turtles.
First, it's going to be ferrets.
Yeah, ferrets.
Yeah, turtles, snakes, and your typical, you know, cats, dogs.
Yeah, don't deny people the kittens.
And that's a bird. Good.
Okay, birds are fine. People don't really give a shit about birds. But yeah, you know,
a
ferret can look cute. For diversity's sake.
You don't want to come off
the United
birdist,
Colors
right?
of Benetton with animals?
Yeah.
Okay, sure. So you're, I see almost like a Noah's Ark theme. Once again, get back to that boat. One of you in a robe.
There
big
we go.
Long beard.
The
People
United
love
species.
That Noah movie so much.
Sure.
You know, they'll all go, that Noah movie we all loved and went to see.
That's still in theaters, isn't it?
It's in religious theaters, I'm sure, still.
No, it isn't.
I'm sure it's playing at some churches.
That was like the first group of people to be against it, wasn't it?
Was it?
That wasn't like the Bible. is so violent.
What was with the car chase in the middle?
Yeah, like there was supposed to be like happiness and joy over this flood. Like, oh, this Noah movie's terrible.
I always thought, here's what I always thought about Noah.
I missed the clamor.
Yeah, it was like, I always thought like the pigs would like come up to Noah at one point and just go, hey, we hear you got a son named Ham. That's nice. Yeah, we love that. We love the son named Ham. It's great. Anyway, we'll be over here if you need us. Asshole.
Yeah, that's the first thing they thought of when they wrote the script.
What's that? The pigs?
Putting talking pigs in, talking to Noah.
Maybe it would have done better.
It should have done better.
I think that's what Christian groups were looking for.
What about the scene where the unicorns are on the shore and they're like, damn, hey, you said four. Why do we got here?
You guys can swim, right? You're thinking about mermaids. You always thought we were mermaids. Well, there's a good question. Where'd the mermaids go then? Why aren't they still around? If we're, they should have been able to survive that shit.
Oh, my God. I just started thinking that the unicorns did swim.
Yeah.
That's how we got narwhals. There, we did it.
I think what happened was it was a last-minute thing where the mermaids and the unicorns just made love.
Oh, yeah.
That's where you got the narwhals from. Because that is clearly a mix of those two species.
That's a mix of two species and a bachelor film, bachelor party film.
What?
It's working for everybody.
Okay. So anyway, Dave's more of a churchgoer than I am, so they must show movies there that I am not.
I said bachelor party film.
So where do you see Cloudscape going in the future? What is your goal? Obviously more anthologies in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But like where do you want to be?
Well,
first of all, we were talking about like getting your work out there into the world. Like
where
can people find these
Yeah,
these works?
Well that's the one thing that we haven't been able to be more clever about than everything else.
Yet.
Which is distribution.
Okay. So you can obviously order them like at your website.
Yes. Yeah. So you can buy any physical copies or digital copies on our website. Digital is definitely a component that we're looking at, trying to get, EPUBs and PDFs for people to just pay less and download those.
Okay.
As far as distribution right now, though, I mean, it's kind of sad. It's like we carry an armload of books to RX Comics downstairs here.
Yeah.
And we take the books up to Lucky's and we take the books to Golden Age and they'll buy three or four and put them on the shelf.
Oh, the most grudgingly buying them.
Yeah, I was going to go, is there a heavy sigh before these things?
Oh, you know what? I will say
please do.
Yes.
That RX, Lucky's, and Golden Age have all been a real pleasure to deal with.
Oh, that's good.
In fact,
I find it funny that I'll tell people, like, oh, yeah, we sold some books to Golden Age. And they're like, oh, man, that must have been pulling teeth. Those guys, so corporate. And they're sweethearts.
They used to. The reason they're saying that is because they used to not be.
Okay.
To the point where, like, I remember, like, many, many, many years ago, someone was doing a news thing on them, and they asked one of the staff members, so do you have the indie stuff in town? Because they were talking about things like dysfunctional.
Sure.
Like, we just don't feel it's a high enough quality to be in our store. And like in the background, you see some, I don't want to say what books they were, Rob Liefeld, but there was like some books in the background that were not the highest quality books.
Sure. Okay.
But it was a real kind of slag on the local talent.
Mm. Right.
And so it kind of soured things for a little while there.
Right. Well, I'll admit that maybe I'm getting a different impression because all the Cloudscape books have spines and color covers and barcodes on the back.
Yeah, so it's professional. It's not just rinky dink. I got like a I got a Xeroxy in my hand right now.
When you brought your Mini into a comic store and you gave it to the guy, you felt like after you left, you just threw it into the garbage can. Like, okay, that was $5. I could have.
I mean, it's interesting, but like there was a time maybe I guess 4 years ago when there was still Elfsar Comics. And those,
that was a local comic company.
Yeah, they were down in Yaletown, and they took some books off us on consignment, and nothing happened with them.
Yeah,
all.
No incentive to sell things you have on consignment.
And this is the thing. So I came in with our next book, and I said, look, I don't want to do consignment. I know you want me to do consignment, but we've produced these books where I can sell them to you for 50% off cover price. I think that's more than fair. I don't expect you to buy a lot, but if you want two or three issues, I need you to buy them up front. And if you don't sell them in 3 months, I'll refund you the money.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And
no risk.
Yeah. And so he said, okay. And so he gave me some money. And what was interesting was like, he put some cash on the table and bought them off me. And immediately after handing me over the cash, I see him pulling out like book racks and doing a facing of our books.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, where were our books before? Oh, wedged in with all the trade paperbacks? Oh, where are they now? Because you've put some cash down? Oh, now they get a facing. And yeah. And it's really like, I don't know, this might get me into some trouble, but like I will say to any listener, if you're doing independent comics, if you walk into a store and they say consignment, just turn around and walk out. don't leave anything behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you just want to not make a sale. Like, if you're okay with losing those books forever, because I guarantee you can dig a hole in your backyard and throw your books in that hole, and a money tree will grow before you get money for the consignment books.
I'm really happy to hear about this money tree. I used to do all mine consignment. You're absolutely right.
One question.
Oh, please.
How old does this comic have to be to grow into a money tree?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying your chances are
better
that you will grow a money tree than sell books on consignment.
I should have put my
I was coasting on the edge of something that was going on at the time, like Fantagraphics and Drawn and Quarterly were doing quite well. And so what would happen would be I would send my comics to those folks, and they would do a little plug in the back of their comic for my comic. And they go, here's all the comics we're reading this week. And it was really nice.
Yeah.
You know, and so what would happen then would people would go to the comic stores and ask about, you know, is my stuff here? And they and then the comics, you know, then the people who worked at the comic store would go, oh, I guess it's real. You know, and then as long as it like sells one, all of a sudden they're interested.
Yeah.
Now, I used to be a bit of a weasel sometimes. And what I would do is I would sometimes go and I would hide the comics that I, you know, had brought in. And then I would come back another time and just go, how are they selling? I don't know. Let's go look. Well, looks like we sold 5. I guess we owe you this much of money. And they give me the money. I'm like, all right. Thank you very much. And off I go. You know, so
I can't believe you're admitting to all these felonies on the air.
Look,
I have to do some heavy editing on this episode.
No, I'm fine with that.
I'm going to put all this part backwards. So if anyone's really interested in what Ian did illegally in the United States,
you know from the type of comics that I did that I've confessed to a lot of stuff in these comics.
Sure.
And something that we've talked about.
I just want you to be able to cross the border. That's all I want.
Oh, I've only screwed people in Canada. Don't worry about
you told
it.
Me about some funny money. There was some Canadian.
Oh, that's true. Okay, I do counterfeit money.
You shouldn't be talking about that on anyway.
That's fair enough. Okay,
but I think. I mean, I don't know. I think the comic store has themselves to blame if they're not keeping proper inventory.
Like, that's right.
You know, they should be able to walk in, and they should just be able to go like, no, Mr. Boothby, we've sold 0 comics. But if you just take them to the shelf, and they're like, oh, I don't know. I guess we sold 4. Like. Because this is the thing, like, that's the case, though, with most of these comic stores, is they don't track the indie stuff. So, you know, you leave your stuff on the shelf and come back, and maybe you're in an argument that, oh, well, I left 5. Where are they? Oh, I don't know. Well, don't have a record of them being sold. Well,
I also found that comic stores were some of the worst places to sell your comics. Like, record stores were a great place to do it. Indie bookstores were a great place to do it. Some place that your thing stands out, but there were so many, like, mini comics, the type of which were mine, that you put them in that mix, who knows what's good and what's crap.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I try to find other homes. Well, and I'd also drop them places, like, I'd be in a waiting room for my dentist, and I'd put a couple there, because it's like, well, this is better than McLean's.
Yeah.
And I'd hide them around town in various places where people needed something to read, like a laundromat, or I'd be on a train, and I'd leave some on there in the magazine area.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is why I think we sell really well at RX, and we sell really well at Golden Age, because I think with Golden Age, we're different.
Mm-hmm.
And with RX, they have a dedicated shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, we don't really sell well at Lucky's, and I think the reason for that is it's like what you're saying, is that we're like one indie book in a sea of indie books.
Yes.
And so when you go to Lucky's, we're not notable at all. It's like, well, everyone's doing that. Like, that's not interesting. But RX, it's like, well, I want an indie book. Well, we have this shelf for you. Great. I'll pick something from that shelf. Or you go to Golden Age. Well, I don't want any of this superhero stuff. Well, we got this one little tiny section here. Great. So those are our two best-selling shops, actually, is RX and Golden Age.
It's like that at Comic Cons, too. Sometimes you think, like, oh, it'd be great for me to be in an aisle of people that are doing similar stuff to me. No! You want to be in an aisle of people that are different than the thing you want to be next to the person who's selling pottery. Because then when it gets to you, yours is, oh, what's this? And then they go to it instead of, it's another one of those. No, it's different once you look inside and, there's nothing I can do in this 1 second that I've got to grab your attention.
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah, it's sort of, it is a lot like I mean, the comics that I used to do, I used to do like semi-autobiographical stuff, some comedy stuff. And to my mind, that's very similar to what we do with podcasts right now. This podcast is very similar to the kind of type of comics I used to do. And like the type of comics, it's tough to explain what this podcast is to people. It's like, well, what is it? It's two white guys talking about their past and their fuck, and we sometimes talk about movies. But if you listen to it, I hope it's different. I think it's different. But God, it's hard. You know, if you see us all in a row, these podcasts, shit. But if like if I can get us at a Comic Con and go like, we do this stuff, this is what we do, and you're just looking at like comics, but wait, we're a podcast, we look a little different right now, let me explain to you now, that seems to be what works best.
Well, here's what works best. What's what I like to say? It's two guys sitting in a room talking while they're naked. No one else ever asked any other questions after that.
Okay, the last couple of shows have had a lot of nudity in them. Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. Back to you, Jeff. Hello. No. Oh, and I also want to... Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like...
We don't make guests.
That sounds a lot like me trying to tell people about Sneaky Dragon. It's like these two guys, they're in the room, and they just, you know, just listen to it.
Their sound quality's pretty good. Yeah. It's higher sound quality than most other podcasts.
That's what we go for.
No, this is
easy. It's easy to explain.
This is one of my preferred podcasts to ink by. Actually.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Well, because you don't laugh, so your hand doesn't shake. that's the best part of it. If you have one that's funny, it's impossible to ink to. Oh my god!
It's this or white noise. One of those two things. Yeah. Just get that job done.
I ink to old radio mysteries because there's no laughter, and I don't.
I can't stop listening to this shit until I'm done. Oh, I've got to get done with this piece of. There it goes, and we're good. We are. It is nice sometimes, like because we do another podcast called Completely Beatles, and that one is incredibly long. Mm. And I know, like my wife draws to that one sometimes, and it's like, oh, that's good. You don't have to like stop your groove for like 3 hours. So. You know, to do your thing.
I agree. That's another one. That's another one on my inking playlist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool.
So when you're writing, you prefer to listen to music and not have talking?
Yeah, I can't do a podcast while I write.
Yeah, no, I can see
it's
that.
Too distracting. No. In fact, like even like if I have to do like any web design or like respond to emails, mm-hmm. even anything that involves like actually forming words in my brain, I can't do a podcast.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah.
You know, as soon as like the storyboarding's done and I'm just like executing the art, I can kind of turn off half my brain and then it's just like going through the paces.
Yeah,
you know? And that's where podcasts are great. You know,
I'm the same. I can listen while I'm inking and while I'm coloring, but as soon as I'm like uploading the show or thinking about, or even just like flicking between stuff, like uploading it and stuff like that, where my mind is distracted by my tasks at hand, that I've totally lost track of what's happening.
Yeah, forget about it. I used to do audiobooks, and then I just sort of fell into podcasts, and it's been good. It's been good. Most of my podcasts are Vancouver podcasts, actually. It's funny. I was just thinking about that today.
There's some good stuff out of this town.
Yeah, there is actually. Yeah.
Not that you should vote for any of them at the Georgia Strait.
Yeah, we're not saying that.
This one.
What we're saying.
Then the panel. This is the best
of Vancouver right here.
Right here, yeah.
Well, this is
obviously third place, not tied.
Yeah,
that's what we're going
not
for.
Not tied with the Waffle Hut.
We don't want to be tied with a. We don't want to be tied with a radio show third best podcast.
What was it? It was like the Team 1030 or something.
Team 1040.
We don't
want
to mention numbers or names.
Yeah, we don't want to. We don't want to mention names, but the Team 1040. Yeah, but they're a radio show that has its own an advertising budget.
Doesn't bother me at all. I was so shocked that we got on that list. So shocked.
I just want to like kind of squeak past them.
Okay, here's what you need to do. Take some white out and just put it over their names.
No, it's fine.
All right, it's fair enough.
I mean, I'm fine with that.
Yep.
We just need to go up.
Understood.
Like life should be a constant.
Let's get back to Jeff's.
You hear that, Caustic Soda? They're coming for you.
That's right.
Yeah, well, give us 30 years. We'll get to you.
Now, I want to say thank you for something you did a year ago. We're having a fundraiser for my cat. Who was sick, had a little tumor, not cancer tumor, but had to be taken out. And you and some other, Kathleen Gross, I forget who's the third.
Christine Vivier.
Yeah, all were there part of the fundraiser. And what we did was some improv. And then you guys all drew things based on the improv. Then we were inspired by your drawings, and we did some scenes based on that. And then we just did a similar thing, not for charity, but just for the heck of it, at VanCaf this year. What was that like for you, drawing in that kind of capacity, like live in front of folks?
That was a lot of fun. I gotta say, I think when we did it at the Café du Soleil, That was easier because everyone was focused on the stage and I was just drawing.
Right, you three of you were at a table all drawing
yeah,
things. Yeah,
and that to me was easier, where when I was standing up and we had these easels and everyone was seeing what I was drawing, I really felt the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of having like writer's block at certain points where I'm just like, well, I don't want to, no, that's stupid. I need a good idea before I start drawing.
And you were just yelling, that's stupid. And we were getting our feelings hurt.
Maybe.
We're so sensitive.
But yeah, no, and then, no, but I think Kathleen, of all of them, really rose to it because she has an improv background.
Mm-hmm.
So she really improved her ideas into comics. And I found like, I kept falling into this trap where I was very literal. Like, someone would do something and I would literally draw the thing they did. And so then when it came back to revisiting the drawings, it's like, oh, I guess we'll just do the same skit a second time. Where, like, you know, Kathleen was making these, like, totally original cartoons that were these, like, springboards for these totally new skits.
Yeah.
And so, like, at the end of it, I was... I think it went really well, but at the end of it, I was totally like, oh, you did it wrong, Jeff.
Well, disagree. I think
he's torn up with jealousy.
And then you did it like in front of people, like with giant board. Then yeah. They watched you drawing while you were drawing. That was impressive.
Oh, thank you. Well, yeah. I was glad to keep pace, actually, in that case, too. Like, just like getting the drawings done, like... It was, again, like, that was where Kathleen was amazing, because she, I think everyone else did like three or four drawings and she had like five or six.
Yeah, she's just... I'm working with her on some stuff right now, and I feel a little guilty though, because I'm she's one of those people I've seen and going like, yeah, she's really going someplace. I don't want to get in her way, but I do want to, you know. Yeah, this is, if I can get in on this a little bit before she realizes she's a genius, I might be able to get some good work with her going. And so we're jamming on some stuff.
Well, this is one thing you can say to Kathleen.
Yeah.
Finish that book.
That's right. That's what we always have to say to her, is finish that book. Put a thing on Twitter where she had like all her pages lying on the ground.
Oh, great.
That she'd been working on for the last little while. It was really impressive. It reminded me of like when I used to give a damn and I would do a similar thing. But yeah, she's fantastic.
Sure.
Yeah, we got a lot of talent in this town.
Yes.
I don't want to be townist.
That's one of the things that we do here, actually, is mentoring. And that's just one example of our mentoring, Sneaky Drake and mentoring.
It's just saying...
Finish that book, Kathleen.
Right?
Yeah, there we go.
Get on it.
More cartoonists need that, I think, actually.
Sometimes you just need someone behind you saying, finish that book.
Yeah, it is a tough thing to finish that
book.
Holy
cow, is it tough.
Oh, boy.
We really are.
Especially the last bit of it. You know what I mean? Like, when you get to the very near the... Like, I remember... I only speak from my limited experience, but... You know, just as you get to the very end and there's like some panels you've left undone because you weren't sure what you wanted to do there. So you just kind of left them blank and then you have to go back and work on them. And it's like, this is agony. I'm not even sure what I'm doing now is right for great choice.
And by that point, you know you're a fraud.
You
suspected it at first, but now clearly, once I finish this, I'm just revealing to the world I'm a fraud.
Oh my God. Well, now you've entered my head.
You work like Colin does. I can't do that.
Colin Upton, you're speaking of.
Yeah, Colin.
Who, by the way, has been part of almost all of these incarnations of you know, different collectives throughout the years.
Yeah, it's true. Right. He's a
card. He's the Highlander. He remains immortal throughout. And if you look at pictures of him, he has not aged.
It's true. He's lost some weight, but that's
he's only gotten,
yeah, just because people are getting suspicious.
That's right.
So he had to go, I have to change my appearance in some way. What can I do? I can't facially change my way. I can lose some weight. Okay. See, change has occurred,
there
right?
There we
fellas?
Go. Yeah. But
you can't do that. You have to systematically
do the whole page. Yeah. Like I saw Colin working and like he had these like finished panels and then these like empty spaces and I was like, how can you draw that and leave that blank and then draw that?
That's the Hernandez brothers. They do that. They draw the panels that they like to draw first.
Mm.
Yeah,
the enjoyable panels.
Right.
And then you look at the blanks and go, I've got to finish this. It's driving me crazy. You let your OCD kick in and then I got to finish
this. I spread it out. I just like, I rough the whole thing out. I pencil the whole thing. I ink the whole thing.
Yeah,
and I always start like top. You know, top left to bottom right. That's how I work. Yeah.
That's funny because like a couple of guests we've had on the show, Alex Robinson and Mike Dawson, they actually write and draw at the same time. Like they don't do a thumbnails. Mm-hmm. They don't do a script. They just sit down and start drawing
it. That seems insane.
And this is even insane because they'll end up having to go and like remove 10 pages.
Yeah.
Of work or redraw elements of it that they've changed their mind about. But even there, like listening to them talk one time, and Alex said, I'll often do a page and I'll think, well, this is no good. but I'm just going to keep on going, and I'll go back and fix it when I get closer to the end. But then he'll go back, and he won't be able to find the page that he thought was so terrible. They all look acceptable, or they look fine.
Well, it always seems to me the best way to do a comic, and no one will ever do this, but it's like, this is your sensible way to do a comic, is like, start in the middle.
Yeah.
And work your way out, because then your middle will be the most mediocre art, and by the time you get to the end, because what always starts is you start at the beginning, and then your art improves, and like the end is great. Yeah. You're like, what's this shitty character in the first? But like, work your way out. Now you're used to your characters, and here you go. But no one's ever in the history of anything ever going to do it.
That's
but
true.
It's the most logical way to do it, to have a consistent
book. No, you're right.
Book.
I should have done that. Cause
that's interesting.
With rounders or with any script I write, it's all very carefully thumbnailed, like really carefully thumbnailed, like to the nth degree. And I don't actually start drawing until I'm happy with all the pages that I've organized or how I figured it out. But that doesn't count for the drawing so much. It's more for the flow of the story and things like that. So then when I'm doing the story, I can just leave a panel undrawn because I know what's coming after that.
Right.
It's not really important what that panel contains, just as long as the story keeps moving. And sometimes it's just repetitive things.
Weird. Yeah, no, I couldn't do that. I just couldn't. Leaving a blank panel would drive me crazy. But, I know. I think it's either that, they start in the middle, or they just need to draw the character like 100 times. Because, like, that's what happened to me with teaching this in Japan, is like we did all these character sketches and we started the story. And then halfway through the story, Jonathan was just like, what's going on with James's nose? And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, his nose is getting bigger. And I'm like, well, I don't know. It feels better that way. And he's like, well, it's not consistent to the beginning. I'm like, well, yeah, but it's going to be like, I like the character design better with a big nose. And he's just like, yeah, well, I mean, now you're going to have to, like, go back and, like, redraw things. I'm like, no.
The hell I do. Yeah. Dear Jim Davis, hi. I noticed that Garfield changed over the years. I think you're going to have to go back and redraw all those early Garfields because people are really going to have a problem. Best-selling book in the what? In the how much? In the you got your own plane? Okay. I will shut up. Okay, goodbye. How did I get this number? Okay, goodbye.
By the way, I like lasagna, too.
And I hate Mondays.
Yeah, it turns out lasagna is actually a code word for a very deviant sexual act that Jim Davis enjoys.
I know that.
Yeah, and that's why whenever
that's why I like lasagna too.
Ooh.
Don't judge me.
And I hate Mondays,
which is also a deviant sexual term.
That's right. He does not care for that.
I don't care for that.
Nobody likes Mondays.
Nobody likes that one.
That's not right.
No one likes that. Just Germans.
Yeah.
What?
Okay, we're gonna start wrapping up pretty soon.
But you know, it's.
Go
I was just gonna say one more thing.
By the way, look at how much time is left on the podcast, and see if I'm right that we are gonna start wrapping up now. If you're seeing like now another hour, you know that. Anyway, go.
Let's make a liar out of Ian. Someone who shared studios with Dave Stevens, who did The Rocketeer, he expressed that too. He found it so frustrating because he would draw all these beautiful panels, and he would leave one blank, and he would have like most of the comic done. And this one panel, I think one was of the dog character, and he just couldn't find a dog that he liked, like an image that he liked for that dog, and so he'd work on it and then put it aside, and so always this one blank panel, page after page done, this one blank, and it just drove the guy crazy. But I don't know, if you don't feel it, don't draw it, you know.
Yeah, well, that's valid if it's just like if you just don't think you're gonna give your best. I don't know. I guess my thought process is different. It's just like I put all that in the writing and the thumbnailing, and then it's just like, well, this has to get done now, and it's just work. And it's like, if I have to draw a train right now, I'm gonna draw a train right now.
Yeah. That's definitely something I can put off.
And you know, it feels to me like when you tell someone about a TV show you like, and you go like, oh, you got to watch Community, and you're like, all right, I'll watch Community. All right, don't watch the first season, just watch the second season. You know, because it's always going to take time to find your sea legs, and it's the same thing with like the first trade of anything I like. Okay, take that and throw. I mean, if I'm telling someone to read Hate, I'm not going to go, first, you got to find Neat Stuff. You got to go back and read the Bradleys. You got to really get the whole lead into it.
You got to go before that. You got to collect all the weirdos that Peter Baggy edited.
You really got to get all the character arc. You got to build it up. And
It's hard sometimes. Like, I actually, I'm introducing my friend Kate to Babylon 5, which I don't know if you've ever watched it, but
nope.
It's a fun science fiction series from the 90s. It suffers a lot for its age, like
because it was from the 90s,
the acting could be better. The CG is pretty abysmal,
and it's all written by the same guy generally, except for an occasional Peter David episode.
That sounds more interesting to me because it has its own voice.
Well, this is the thing. So it's J. Michael Straczynski, who went on to ruin Spider-Man.
well, you're really painting a picture of him.
No,
really man, now.
No, he did some. I mean,
he did some things.
Yeah, he did He did the first two books of Rising Stars that were good.
He's a fella.
Yeah, okay. No, he's done some good stuff.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's done a lot of comics. Yeah.
Sure, I don't know. Anyway, ruined Spider-Man.
All right, it's fine.
Yeah. Anyway, so you know, he's
who hasn't ruined Spider-Man?
Yeah. No, he's done some good comics.
Yeah, okay. He's fine.
He's done some good comics.
Why even have to talk this hard for?
But yeah, so it's
Babylon 5.
It's a long like
drawn out
story arc. Like the whole thing is one continuous story.
Wow.
And so what's hard is that season one is terrible. So bad, but there's little things that you need to know.
Yeah.
Can't you go back and appreciate them?
But like, I don't know the show well enough to go like, okay, we only need to watch episode 1, 3, 7, and 12, and then we'll watch season 2.
Yeah.
So we just watched all of season 1, and it really degraded into like Mystery Science Theater 3000. But what's really telling is that when we started season 2, silence.
Okay.
And like, you know, I was like, so how do you feel about the show, Kate? And she's like, you know, I haven't really been turning to you with jokes for the last like 5 episodes, so I'm gonna say season 2 is a big improvement.
He didn't mention that she's tied to a chair. He's only feeding her porridge every day.
And her will is broken.
Porridge. Her will has been snapped.
Yeah, maybe season 1 broke her will. I don't know.
It's one of
he's entered her into the forum.
Straczynski famously said that like he had the last.
I've never heard this.
Okay. Well, you will now, and then you will be part of the fame game. All right. Is that he had the final scene written? Before he wrote the first episode,
wow.
So he knew where this was all going to. You know, everything. Wow. Hey, Dave, what was that you said earlier about there's no way my phone's going to go off? What was that earlier you were saying about that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh my God. It's Straczynski on the phone.
Yeah, someone's mad at us.
Oh, okay.
Hello.
Say I ruined
Spider-Man? Michael?
I'll tell
hello.
You.
Hello. Napoleon? I was thinking, it made me think of that sketch from the Sammy J. Modlin show. Yeah,
I got the reference, the Bobby Bittman sketch. Man, that's obscure.
Nappy. Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Well, it's just because I was talking my phone.
Oh, my gosh.
Sure, okay. What the hell? Come
sorry,
on.
That was a...
Cut me some slack. It's okay. Famous.
No, it's okay. He Mr. Peabody, said, we all got in the Wayback Machine. We all had a nice time. It was absolutely fine.
You enjoyed that show.
But you're right. But the reason I brought that up is because then that kind of cursed a lot of other series because they all went, you've got to know exactly where your series is going to end. And so all these series, you know, made a big deal about that. But then you limit yourself as a creator when your characters grow and change and like, now I can't kill that character off because they're a big part of the end. And I'm now just leading everything towards this. And it's like, no, you got to like be free and easy with your characters, I think, you know?
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, that's, I think it's kind of telling where, you know, for Breaking Bad, season 3, apparently they had no idea what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like they just, They intensely plotted season 2. They knew, like, we're going to end...
Wait a second. I think that's Vince Gilligan.
Let's just pause for a second. Okay. I'm sorry. We'll do an edit here. There we go. I'm not picking up Eve from the water park.
All
right. So what about... What about Breaking Bad?
So, like, season 2 was intensely plotted out. They knew that they were going to end with, you know...
What happens?
I'm like, should I spoil it? Nah, they knew the ending.
Yeah.
And they plotted everything to lead to that ending. But season 3, they're just like, I think we'll have a couple of these things happen. Meh.
Yeah.
And they just sort of let it all unwind.
Can I refresh my memory? What happened? It was that where he meets the heroin addict season?
Season 2 was, with Jane and...
Oh, season 2 was with Jane. So what was season 3 then?
Season 3 was the brothers... getting revenge,
really? That was...
and then Gus kind of taking a prominent role.
That seemed really plotted, like that whole section of having those guys crawling up and then having them
like,
appear later.
They wrote that episode, but then what's going to happen with the brothers? We're not sure.
They didn't know.
And when you look at how it, you look at where they ended up, like they really had, like they didn't know what to do with the brothers, and so they kind of changed it. They changed horses kind of mid-stride in that season because they were just like, well, we've taken the brothers as far as they can go.
Yeah.
Now let's do some stuff with Gus.
Yeah.
Now let's do some stuff with Walt.
Introduce Mike.
You know, I guess we're gonna have to do this thing with Gale and the end of season 3 now. You know, and so that's how they move forward from that point.
Well,
and
you look at his background though. I mean, he had done X-Files before then, which is, you know, they did have the mythology down, but in between then, all of a sudden, hey, there's these characters called the Lone Gunmen that, you know, were just for one episode, but people seem to like them now. They're a big, hey, why don't I give them a spin-off show? And that was Vince Gilligan's show, yep. was the Lone Gunmen. Well, this is going to be tightly plowed. Oh, it's done. Okay. Well, lessons learned were sometimes you do this and sometimes you do that.
Yeah.
You know, plot the outside, your beginning and ending maybe, and then but have fun in the middle.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something to be said for knowing the direction you're going in
generally, but not being too locked on it that you kill stories.
Yeah. I mean, that's Teach English in Japan. Like me and Jonathan sat down and we mapped out an entire year of these two characters' lives in Japan, and in the sense that we did the broad strokes. First, they're going to arrive in Japan. They're going to end up in this town. They're going to work at these companies. They're going to climb Fuji. They're going to do this, this, and this, and it's going to be the end of the year, and they're going to have to decide if they go home or not.
Then the superpowers come
in. And that's all we really like plotted. And so now, like, we kind of then focus, you know, maybe on 10 or 20 page arcs. We like zero in and go, okay, what exactly gets said and what happens? And that changes things. Things meander a little bit. Like, we still ultimately know we're going to end up here at the very end, but the direction we come at that ending, we don't know, because things are going to keep growing and evolving.
Right? And it makes it, to me, it makes it more fun as a writer. You know, you're kind of seeing where they go, and they will naturally go in a direction, you know? It's sort of like planning out your, and, you know, you're the dad here. Maybe you are. You have to go to Donut Shop to see. But like, it's a dad going like, you know, for my kids, I want them to be this, and they're going to be this, mm-hmm. and they're going to, yeah, sure. but they're going to go their own direction. And if you try and force them to be a violinist, well, things are going to go badly.
Genetics will tell. You can't help it. Their own wayward personalities will take over, and you just cannot control that. Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah. And that's how it should be.
Yeah, and the same that's thing with your art, I think. That's just my judgment.
Yeah. Oh no, I agree. I mean, that's as a writer, that's my favorite moment is when the character does something that you didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. That's my favorite time when I'm writing a story is when a character. I mean, you're making them do it, but you just realize as a writer, you're like, oh, in this situation, this character would actually do this instead because that's more true to them. So,
hey guys, do you think that's what it's like to be God?
No.
You just create them and go like, I know how this world's going to end, but I don't know what they're going to do to get there.
Yeah.
No, let's just watch how this plays out.
Sure.
Cool. They did Breaking Bad. I like that TV show. I'm going to binge watch those. And then God enjoys
you
a
You might
good
be
TV
onto
show.
Something there.
Yeah. Well,
he's seen lots of episodes of Breaking Bad.
I've seen many episodes.
Lots and lots of Breaking Bad.
I've seen many episodes of Breaking Bad.
I'm just saying he's seen lots of people's lives that follow
that broken bad?
Follow similar arcs. And
if you read the Bible, there's a lot of people that broke bad.
Pretty much that's every character in the Bible, yeah.
Oh, that's our next podcast, Breaking Bible.
Breaking
Bible. We compare the Bible to Breaking Bad.
Sure.
See, like, so what character is Gus? What character is Walt? What character? We'll talk about that later.
Sure.
Just to, again, get us to the very end. Where would you, in a dream world, want to see Cloudscape going in the future? What's your dream? We're going to be back here in 5 years. What's Cloudscape done that's like so proud? Proud Papa, what happened?
Well, I mean, I think I would like to see that we've continued to do a printed book every year.
Okay.
And then I would also maybe like to see our...
Won't you run out of themes?
Oh, we'll never run out of themes. I'd actually like to see our digital arm take off a little more, too. So we had a really successful digital anthology called Epic Canadiana, which was all Canadian superheroes.
Yeah.
We just thought, Canadian superheroes, probably not something we want to spend money on. But maybe we'll do it as an EE anthology. And that's been our most successful digital book. And we're actually doing the second one right now.
Yeah.
And there's submissions open right now if you go to cloudscapecomics.com.
Cloudscapecomics.com. So if you want to do there. Comics, Wait. You got an idea for a Canadian superhero?
Canadian superhero.
All right.
Wait, what is it again? www.cloudscapecomics.com.
Thanks for clarifying. Now, listen, can only Canadians do this? Or say you live in another country?
If you live outside of Vancouver?
If you are outside of Vancouver, if you can recruit a Vancouverite to work with you, then you can be involved.
Very good. But the communist organization you're part of requires one Vancouver.
Actually, for print, yes. But actually, for the digital anthologies, actually, we're more open, actually, come to think of it. So for Epic Canadiana Volume 2, probably anyone we'd take submissions from.
Ah, very good.
Yeah.
So if you hear that world, because this goes out around the world.
Around the world.
There you go. Cloudscapecomics.com.
You got it. Yeah.
Boom.
And it'll be probably the first article on the blog right now. But yeah, I'd like to see us maybe in the Comixology store in the future. Mm-hmm. And like ideally, I'd really like to see us in a state where maybe we're either selling enough books or we've been given an operational grant of some kind by some government organization that would allow me to work at it full time. Mm-hmm. That's kind of my goal.
Preferably CSIS, the Canadian Secret Intelligence
Services. Anyone,
well,
basically.
If they did it, they'd have to do it in secret.
Yeah, that's so they couldn't tell you. They couldn't tell you that.
Yeah, right.
You'd have to meet in a donut shop, trade some money, trade some envelopes.
And hopefully secret. We have our studio space still. And that's something I haven't really talked about yet, which
no.
we have a studio space in South Vancouver, not just kind of up the hill from here.
Okay.
At 41st and Fraser. It's inside South Memorial Park. We are in a 100-year-old building.
So haunted as fuck.
Oh, very haunted. Yeah, I tell people we're in the haunted house in the park.
Okay.
And we have the whole top floor to ourselves.
What do you think of this comic? Boo! You say that every time.
Yeah. Yeah, what theme should we do? Horror again? But
romantic farce.
All right. Do one about booze.
But yeah, we have a brick and mortar space for artists to work in right now, and this is where our meetings happen. So every Wednesday, 7:30 p.m., we're at our studio space at 5955 Ross.
Okay.
So I'm working all the plugs into
Now this address is at cloudskatecomics.com.
Yeah.
You could also find out
this.
You can find
it on our website. So we do meetups every Wednesday, and we have desk space for artists to work from. So
nice.
We have several members who are working there. Actually, Julian Lawrence is going to be setting up a desk there.
Fantastic cartoonist.
Yeah. That's great. And
That's a collective we missed, the Drippy Town.
Yeah. And we're also doing life drawing classes there. So Saturdays from 1 to 4, there's going to be life drawing models for people to do life drawing. And we're doing some mentorship where we're actually doing comic classes for youth. So basically, 5 years from now, I'd love to see that we still have that studio space.
Right.
We're currently renewing with the city. And we'll see if we get approved to keep the space.
I'm knocking on wood right now for you.
Thank you.
Those youth have grown up. They've become cartoonists of their own.
Yeah, hopefully. But hopefully 5 years from now, we still have the space. We're still running the classes. And maybe I'm getting paid to make it all happen instead of just volunteering my time for it. That would be ideal for 5 years from now.
Nice
yeah.
one. Okay. And we're all, by the way, let me also say, we're all in good health.
Oh, yes.
Everyone's in good health.
Goes without
saying. I'm
going
to say that to you, gentle listener, as well. You're all in excellent health. We're all going to be in good health in 5 years as well. So that's five years in the future, everybody.
Years.
Why? Well, how long were you thinking in the future?
I give myself 3 more years.
You give me 3 more years?
Yeah.
Okay, we got to really pack these shows.
Yeah, we're going to have to, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you don't want to go too long. You got to be like the Beatles. You got to know when to end it.
Wait, are you talking about your life or the podcast?
My life.
Okay, that's not how the Beatles did it.
I think he's talking about a suicide pact.
No, I'm not saying
suicide. You know
what?
There's a podcast I think you need to listen to called Completely Beatles, and you'll see how the Beatles wrapped it up.
There's a podcast about the Beatles?
Listen to our Abbey Road podcast.
Completely Beatles.
I don't know. I don't listen to the damn thing.
It's too long.
It's way too long. Who's
that
kind of time? Totally
that.
You're a dad. You've got no time to listen
I had,
to that.
You know what? I had to listen to the last episode. All of it. Not
Why?
Just parts of it.
Why?
Because we had some gaps and some pauses during it, and I forgot to write them down because I was distracted by the gaps and pauses.
Yep.
And when I went to edit, I was like, oh, I know there's some places where we stopped, and now I gotta go and listen to the whole damn thing to find them.
Okay, now what I'm picturing is that you have like an old-timey radio that you're playing it through, and you gather the whole family around, old-timey Jack Benny style. Let's all listen to Papa on the radio.
Exactly.
And then now all the kids have their notepads out, they're all having a good time, and the
That's
dogs are all
done.
There.
I should have just made them listen to it right down when the pauses happen. Just give me the notes, and then I can edit it.
There you go.
Why didn't I think of that?
Gonna make your children
it's okay.
work for you.
I did some drawing while I was listening.
I'm glad.
I got some work done.
All right.
Yeah. Awesome.
This is, you've been listening to Sneaky Dragon, the podcast where we talk about our other podcast. And
it's good promotion for you.
Yeah, we like to inter promotion.
Excellent promotion. Yeah. Since we're talking about, let's promo some stuff too. Let's plug some things.
Yeah,
Simpsons and Futurama comics. Why not buy some of those?
Yeah, why
there
not?
There you go. You go out and purchase some of that stuff. Last Wednesday of the month, I do a show called The Critical Hit Show here in Vancouver.
Just did it last night. It went really well.
Oh, did you? Well, you weren't there, were you?
I wasn't there.
Very good. You heard word of mouth?
I was feeling really sick yesterday.
Everyone's feeling sick right now. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
That's a live D&D show at the Rio Theater. Hope you come down to that. I'm sure I've got other things, but I can't think of them. Have you done with your plugs now, Jeff?
I guess I'll just
you got a note. You got a little.
I covered 2 out of 3. So one last one as well.
Please.
Maybe I'll just say if anyone's curious about my East Vancouver project.
Yep.
You can go to Jeff Ellis.ca. It's my brand new site. I'm starting for my personal comic projects.
Okay.
And that'll link you to everything else I've been talking about as well.
Wicked.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Jeff Ellis is here. He's been our guest. Dave, have you got anything to plug?
Well, let's just plug the t-shirts on the website.
Fantastic.
We added a bunch of new designs to the website, so if you want to go there, there's a sneaky robot, there's a sneaky submarine, there's the Teenage Mutant Ninja Dragon, and we also have
other copyright infringement shirts.
Other copyright infringement shirts.
All the best in copyright infringement.
I have no original ideas. And then there's some Completely Beatles shirts there, too, if you're interested in... If you're
including
a fan of
our tribute
Beatles,
to the White Album.
We have the tribute to the White Album.
The all-white shirt.
The all-white shirt. And then we also have some that are white with the Completely Beatles mop top on it, and some with their black shirts with a white mop top.
That's right. We just got some of them into the studio today, and they look really nice.
They look really good. But we have a bunch of shirts, and anyone who's waiting for shirts, they're leaving very soon.
Yeah. So sneakydragon.com is our website. We also love to hear from you, so please post on there. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, and listen to past episodes.
Mm.
If you want to post some comments on there and say, hey, I like the show or not, yeah, it's up to you. It's your life. Well, if you want to do that, we're not going to push. But we are going to push this. Straight.com. Maybe vote for us for best podcast if you feel like it.
That'd be fun.
All right. Thanks so much, Jeff, for coming down.
Oh, yeah,
thanks,
for sure.
Thanks, Dave. I'm going to miss you in 3 years' time when apparently you're going to commit suicide on the air.
No.
This is foreboding, this episode.
I was just guessing how long I had to live.
Wow. Okay.
3 more years.
What do you win if you guess right?
Nothing.
Okay.
The nice box.
Stop guessing. Okay. We're ending on a bit of a dark note today.
Yeah,
jeez. Yeah, that's...
Oh, sorry. Weird. Did I bring it down? I'm going to live for years and years.
Okay. You're a lot like J.M. Straczynski.
That's right.
You've written the ending.
I've written the ending. It's just a matter of getting there now.
You know, it's going to be a long, twisted journey. But the middle bit is going to be excellent.
Yeah.
The tiresome middle bit.
Thanks for listening to Sneaky Dragon. Take care of yourselves and be healthy. Live long, healthy lives, everyone.
Unlike Dave.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Everyone, welcome to the show that never happened.